sentence, something like that. MRAs are ideal gravitational wave sources for testing fundamental laws of gravity.
Never mind. It's disappeared.
Oh, okay. So that's why we want to study MRA. And if the fundamental theory of the gravity is slightly different from the general relativity, I mean Einstein's general relativity, then there could be two effects in the MRA waveform. The first effect, we call it incremental effect in the waveform. For example, we study a stellar massive black hole around a supermassive black hole. I mean, in the general relativity, the space-time is curved space-time. But if, I mean, there is a small perturbation or small deviation from the curve, and we can see some slightly waveform difference due to the perturbation. So psi here is some Emery waveform phase as a function of frequency. With the perturbation in the space-time, we will have the perturbation in the phase. But due to there are so many parameters in Emery, and even if such perturbation in the phase exists, it might be degenerate with the parameters. Or sometimes if you find something, I mean, abnormal, it could be due to some systematics in your waveform. So the first effect, I would say, even you see something in the first effect, it's not so confident to claim some deviation in the gravity. And there is a second effect. I just call it 0-1 effect. So for example, what is 0-1 in the standard, in the curved space time, if we consider a particle orbiting around this supermassive black hole in the curved space time, and we know due to the symmetry of the space time, there will be no chaos. I mean, the system is an integrable system. There's no chaos in this space time. But if you have some random perturbation and you lose some symmetry, you lose some conserved quantities, then there might be some chaos. And in the past quite a few years, people have been excited about the chaos feature in the waveform due to the non-curved space time. So let's look at the chaos. Okay, and if you have used this textbook before, and you should be familiar with the following a few slides. Okay, first, let's start with the integrable system. So, I mean, the definition is pretty simple. If the system has the same number of degree of freedom and with the same number of conserved quantities, then such system is called integrable system. And that's my kind of favorite system because that's just easy. For example, the test particle in the curved space time, we have 4 degrees of freedom, the TR theta phi. We also have the 4 conserved quantities, the Hamiltonian, the energy, the angular momentum, and the Carter constant. Okay, and today we will focus on the r theta degree of freedoms because the t and the phi is a kind of trivial here. So here I give you one example: 2 degree of freedom of integrable system. And if you look at their trajectory, the orbits, they just the trajectory just move around on some torus. The torus is defined by your conserved quantities. So that's a beautiful part of the integrable systems.
So it's like phase space, or this what is the space of this torus?
Okay, usually in this plot it's some phase space, and we usually mean the angle action angle variables, but I will explain the angle action variables later. But I believe you know what is angle action variables.
But I haven't thought about it since I read that textbook when I was a grad student. So
okay, yeah, I will explain that later. Yeah. Okay, so then what if we add some random perturbation to the integrable system? And what will happen? Then we rely on the KAM theorem. So basically the theorem tells us that for some integrable system, we add some perturbation to it, and then in general, it becomes non-integrable. Then what happens? So if we want the trajectory torus in the phase space, okay, still keeps their roughly original shape. I mean, it's only slightly deformed without being broken. Yeah. Then we need two conditions for the perturbation. One is the perturbation is small. Okay, that's pretty easy to understand, right? We wanted the perturbation to be small, then we won't be far away from the original system. The second condition is the perturbation should contain no component of the commensurate frequencies.
So broken? What do you mean? I don't understand.
Okay. Let me show you a plot. Okay, so probably I can draw some Poincare map. For example, we are considering a 2-degree freedom system. We have R theta, the 2-degree of freedom, and their conjugate momentum is PR and P theta. And Poincare map, we can define, okay. We can define the Poincare map as every time the trajectory the orbit crosses the equator, theta equal to pi, then we write down the cross point in the phase space PR and R. After it crosses the equator many times, we can get many dots, right? And we probably get some curve, probably some smooth curve, sometimes weird curve. So for integrable system, we will get a smooth curve, usually closed smooth curve. Yeah. For example, we get a curve like this. And this is some a result of the all the trajectory just work on the unbroken torus, but if the torus is broken, you'll probably get some curves like this here. Okay, you see some trajectories. Let me draw it here. Some island. Okay, that's a result of the broken torus, and sometimes you get an even weird Poincare map. Like this.
Okay. I'm sorry, can you say again what you mean by broken torus?
Okay, so here you see the torus is smooth and then nothing special, nothing weird, right? If the torus is broken, say you got two separate pieces, and the torus became broken into two pieces, two separate untouched pieces, then you will get some Poincare map like this.
So you mean like if you cut it in half and separate it into two halves or something, or is it more general than that?
It's more general than that. Yes. Anything makes your torus not so simple is a broken torus. Okay. Yes.
So topologically not a torus.
That's right. Yes. Thank you. Yeah, topological makes a lot of sense. Yes.
Sorry, these are the trajectories in
data space? Okay, you mean the curve here? It's a Poincare map. Poincare map, we just focus on, I mean, in this example, we just focus on the trajectory in the R and the PR, this subspace. I mean, every time the trajectory cross equator, we just write down R and the PR. Then after the trajectory cross the equator many times, we'll get some curve. Yeah, I mean, sometimes the curve looks like this way. That's it's a pretty smooth and well-defined curve. I mean, sometimes it becomes an island. Yeah, and sometimes it become, you know, they are not a simple curve. Yeah.
I'm trying to understand what you're saying. It's not simple anymore topology. It means that particle has jumped from one.
Okay. So if you look at the island, the island are not connected to each other. I mean, in this subspace, but I mean, in the full space, they are still continuous. But simply in this subspace, they kind of look like a jumping between islands. But in the full space, they are not. Yeah.
But the moment from the jump, the PR or the what is the P in this case?
Oh, PR is the angular moment, the conjugate momentum.
The conjugate momentum has jumped.
Okay, no. So if you plot PR as a function of time, right? Say it could be some curve like this. But if you only choose a point, theta equal to 2 pi, and the project, I mean, this point, you probably get it points like this. Okay. You will feel okay. I mean, there are jump on this subspace. Yeah. So actually, of course, they are continuous in the full space. Yeah. Okay. Oh, the second condition is the perturbation should contain. So no component of commensurate frequencies. Again, we need to rely on the action angle variables. So we initially we have some integrable Hamiltonian. Now we add some perturbation to it. And in physical coordinate, we can write them as R theta and the PRP theta. We use X and the PX. And similarly, function of the physical coordinate. But we can have some action angle variables. It's a canonical transform from the physical coordinates to the action angle variables. See, Q and J, the action and the and the angle. In this action angle variable, there is a advantage is that if your system, initial system is integrable, you can write the initial system in the action angle variable as a action only without depending on the angle. But the perturbation part, we usually cannot do that. I mean, for the perturbation part, we have the dependence of the Q, both the angle and the action. Because it depends on angle, we can do the Fourier transform and write them in terms of the different frequency. Let's see. Okay, then after we write the perturbation part into this form, we can see, okay, and we can define the frequency. See, if we have the two degrees of freedom and the theta, we have the QR and the Q theta. And we can define the frequency of omega r as a function. I mean the QR dot dQR over dt or d tau. Yes. So, okay, and the n here also is the nr and the n theta. So the perturbation shouldn't contain components of can measure the frequency. That means, so the all the components must be zero for, so nr, I mean n dot omega could be zero. So that means nr, r, theta, theta. So for nr and theta to be some integers, I mean, this condition is a commensurate frequency condition. Means the two frequencies are commensurate with each other. So for that set of nr and theta, and the corresponding component of the perturbation must be zero. Okay, that's a two condition for the KAM theorem. So if one of the condition is violated, then the chaos can happen. Okay, the first condition is easy to satisfy because we just choose a small perturbation, but the second condition in general, the second one is harder to satisfy. So the second condition violation is in generally the cause of chaos due to the perturbation. Okay, then again from this textbook, how can we test find the chaos? We can use a Poincare map. As I mentioned that, so if you choose some orbit and get the Poincare map, if the compare map is a simple and a smooth closed curve, then that is there is no chaos there. But if you see,
I ask you, just about the whole idea. So in Kerr metric, as I understand, the equations are fully integrable, right? So there is no chaos. But what if you add another body, right? We have like not just the single small black hole, but there is another object orbiting around. So it's already three body problem, and there will be chaos even in Kerr, I believe. So because your idea, you said you would be looking for deviations from Kerr, in these signatures of chaos. But this can be just another perturber, right? Which can easily happen, in this environment. So will you say how to distinguish the two, or that's actually the main point of where you are going?
Okay, you mean astrophysical source, the third body existence, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, I would say it's not hard to distinguish these two. I mean, if you underline space-time, it's a non-Kerr, you will see such signature everywhere, right? For signature for every emerald. Mm-hmm. But for astrophysical source, I don't believe there is a third body in every emerald system. So such signature doesn't show up anywhere.
I see.
Yeah.
So you are looking for universal signatures. I see.
Yeah, we are looking for some deviation to the space-time, to the Kerr space-time.
But that could be one source of deviation, right? So if you have a third body, then that could be one source of your H.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the question is how to distinguish the astrophysical source versus the underlying space-time.
Do you care? You just might want to measure some H. I mean, if there's no H, then there's no H. If there is some H, then you figure out where it comes from.
Okay. We can use a Poincare map to find out where does the chaos happen. So here's an example. Someone did the calculation, consider some integrable system plus some perturbation. Then you will see there are three kinds of trajectory orbits. It's a pretty regular one, right? And the island one, and some pretty chaotic one. But in general, the perturbation is so small, and it's hard to find such, I mean, the parameter space for the chaotic object are very small. It's hard to find chaos anywhere. Then we need some tool called the rotation number, because we know the chaos usually happens around the resonance, yeah, when this condition is satisfied. So we can use the rotation number to find where does the resonance happen. Then we can find the chaos around that part. So the rotation number in our case, because we only have r and theta degrees of freedom, defined as omega r over omega theta, I mean, on average. And numerically, we can calculate them as counting how many times, I mean, in a given time interval, how many times it crosses the equator and how many times it crosses the pericenter. Then we can use these two numbers to figure out the rotation number. Again, for the integrable system, if you consider a bunch of orbits with similar initial condition, but not exactly the same, you will find the rotation numbers, they vary mostly. But for a non-integrable system, you will find some feature, for example, a feature like this here. So here we are considering the 2/3 resonance, and you see when it's far away from the resonance, and the rotation numbers change slowly and smoothly. But around the resonance, it suddenly becomes some constant. That's one of the possible feature. Then we can find some chaotic orbit roughly in this regime. Okay, that's in practically how do we find the chaotic object, chaotic orbits. Okay. So it's a long summary about what we learned from this textbook. Then let's use the principles and what we learned to the non-curved space-time. Okay. The example we are considering in this work is some quadratic gravity. So in the action, you see here's a standard term. You have some quadratic terms. And in this quadratic gravity, they also have some solution to spinning black holes. And we can write the solution as curl plus some perturbation. And the Hamiltonian and can be decomposed at the curl part and there's a perturbation part. Okay. Now we run a bunch of orbits, I mean similar but not exactly same initial condition. We choose a bunch of orbits. So given some energy and angular momentum, I mean, even in the perturbed space-time, the energy and the angular momentum are conserved because the perturbation only depends on r and theta. They don't depend on t and phi. They're still conserved. We can choose some fixed energy and angular momentum and choose some orbit initially from the equator and initially from some from some pericenter, pi is zero, and r was our initial. Okay. So all the orbits have the initial theta and the same initial theta and the same initial PR, but a slightly different initial radius. So in this plot, each dot, okay, here, each dot is an orbit, and we can run the orbit and calculate the rotation number. So here you can see roughly there are three different branches. I mean, the slowly and the smoothly changed branch, okay, and the suddenly changed branches, and the plateau. Actually, we find the three different branches and corresponding to the three different kind of orbits one by one. When it's far away from the resonance, we will get the pretty regular orbit, and the rotation number is slowly changed. And when we get closer to the resonance, we will get the chaotic orbit. And you will get the faster change branch. So the orbit in this branch corresponding to chaotic orbit. And the plateau corresponding to the island. Okay, the island orbits. But due to our perturbation, it's very small. We cannot see the island, the structure so clearly, but we can zoom in this part. Okay. You will find, at least you see some island structure here. And the more interesting orbit is a chaotic orbit. That means the trajectory is on this branch. Here I just show one example. I mean, the chaotic orbit, you feel, you feel roughly they should run this way. See, this way, and this way. I mean, I draw the trajectory randomly, and you will find if we draw the trajectory this way, they will self cross. I mean, they will cross itself. And we find that. So even for the chaotic orbit, the self cross doesn't happen. So how do we get the such chaotic orbit without self crossing? We can show one example this way. Okay, then somewhere suddenly turn back. So in this way, in turn back, it can cover all the space here without self-crossing. And this is exactly what we found. Here is one example of the chaotic orbit on that branch. And you see the Poincare mapper again, and the different color corresponding to the running time. So look at here, initially at this part, it moves towards this direction, then it turns back. And probably you will ask, what's the point of seeing the turn back? And it will have some very interesting result on the waveform and on the Emery waveform. I will explain later.
Yes, we have a question. So first of all, is there an intuition in real space? What's happening with these orbits? Are we going to tell us now?
You mean radiation?
No, in real space, like how do these embryos look, these chaotic embryos look in actual real space? They are just like slowly in spiral thing anyways, or?
Okay, here is without a radiation reaction. So it won't slowly spiral in. And in the real space,
So is it just going to stop? What's happening with the orbit?
What happened to the orbit? You mean in the R theta space?
volume filling.
What?
It's volume filling after some time field.
So you can shoot away some of these embers, they don't inspire anymore, or?
I don't know, the trajectory to fill the space. So there is a chunk of space, the trajectory just fill any point in the space.
So here we are drawing the subspace, the R and the PR subspace. You see the volume filling and pretty chaotic feature. If you look at the R theta, R theta space, you will have the similar feature. Yeah.
When you say volume, when you say volume filling in the space of R theta, do you mean that some orbit which is like initially in the equilibrium?
It's like initially almost any point in that chunk of space, any point it can be crossed by the
trajectory.
So yeah, right. It's not like a reduced space, it's not like plane or whatever, right? So it's a
Okay. Yeah. So some orbit starting off in the equator, you're saying eventually we'll be at the pole.
Yeah.
And also it can get farther away from the black hole.
Huh?
It can also get farther away from the black hole. So either closer or farther. So it maybe it stops.
Yeah,
like,
it's not filling the entire space, it's filling a fraction of the space, right? The fraction of space.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you can look at this plot, right? I mean, this regular orbit is not a volume filling. That's a nice, simple curve, right, without any volume. But if you look at this chaotic, the chaotic objects, they can reach almost any point in some finite volume. That's called volume filling.
Volume of Torus again?
Oh, Torus is the fourth base. Yeah, I don't know exactly in the full space is there a volume filling feature. In subspace there is some feature, I believe so, yeah.
And also what's the commensurate resonance here? Because I mean intuitively I'm guessing that the two frequencies must match or something, right? But now you're just perturbing the metric. That perturbation has an intrinsic frequency on it that matches the embry, or it's just
Okay. So if you write the perturbed part of the Hamiltonian in terms of your Q and your action angle variables, I haven't explained that, but so you can do some Fourier transform. I mean, for each Fourier component, that's a frequency, right? So it contains many frequencies.
Is there a characteristic frequency that has some physical meaning that is matching with your embry frequency, or it's just that it's a collection of frequencies and then you're
many frequencies.
They're all embry frequencies. Like omega r is the embry frequency, the radio direction.
Mm-hmm.
Is the embry frequency in the theta direction. Right?
No, I understand, but the Fourier components of your perturbation don't need to match the ratios, right?
Yeah.
Some interior numbers.
If you have, for example, just say a perturbation, it's like a quadrupole, then you're saying that to be resonant,
mm-hmm.
Then the unperturbed orbit has to have, let's say, like 2 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
I guess that's what I'm asking is like it has like a shape, this perturbation, like a waterfall, and then that's
right. So I guess you can decompose it into like waterfall, waterfall, whatever.
So generic perturbation, right? Generic perturbation of the metric can be fully decomposed into these harmonics,
yeah.
And then you can check this each harmonics, the corresponding combination frequency, whether it's zero or not.
I understand the math. Yeah, I understand the math. There's an intuition for, do you have a Fourier component that is dominant in your perturbation or something?
So whatever it evolves, you can monitor the time-dependent change of omega r, omega theta, omega phi. And once in a while, you will find maybe 2 omega r minus 3 omega theta equals 0. That's the resonance, and that's the point you will have.
I understand that part.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Juan. Okay, then the conclusion is we can use the rotation number as a tool to find where is the chaotic orbit. And we can use a Poincare map to exactly pin down which orbit is chaotic.
So what is the eccentricity here? Are you fixing to just, are you studying for a fixed value of eccentricity? Because
So here I just initially give some small eccentricity pop like 0.2, 0.3. Yeah. But
all of these changes the
yes. I mean in the standard curve, your eccentricity is conserved, but here you only have some approximate eccentricity because it has some tiny change during your orbit phase. Yes. Okay, so the as I mentioned, the most interesting orbits are the chaotic orbit. It has some turn back feature and it will give us some interesting signature in the Emery waveform. I'll explain that later. Yeah, I have been using the action angle variables all the time, but finally it come. Yeah, but because the transform from the physical coordinates to the action variable, action angle variables is a standard canonical transform. And okay, in curve, as I mentioned, so with the action angle variables, we can write the Hamiltonian in term of the conserved quantity, the actions only without any angles. In that case, okay. So the Hamiltonian equation tell us, okay, the actions are conserved and the variables, I mean, the angle variables are changing due to, according to some frequency. And now we add some perturbation to the curve space time. Then again, the curve part can be written as a function of the actions only, but the perturbation part depends on both your actions and your angles. Then if we look at the Hamiltonian equation, you say, okay, the action is not completely conserved due to the perturbation, and the angle has some perturbation frequency. The angle has some perturbation frequency. And the resonance, we define the resonance as this simple way. So you have some integers, nr and n theta. If nr times omega r plus n theta omega theta is zero, then we call it resonance. As we explained in the KAM theorem part, resonance is very special. Okay. So after we write the Hamiltonian, I mean both the initial part plus and the perturbation part in terms of the action angle variable, we can try to solve such Hamiltonian equation, I mean in a perturbative way. Okay, you don't need to look at the details, but I will tell you if we do some a second canonical transformation, I mean from some action angle variables to some new action angle variables, I mean with the transform, okay, or this form. And you probably already notice that, I mean, in the denominator, you have the n dot omega. That means if there is no such component, I mean, if such component is zero, I mean, the resonant component of your perturbation in Hamiltonian is zero, we can do that transform. And with that transform, you recover the Hamiltonian equation we like. So the actions is zero. I mean, action is conserved, and the angles is evolving due to some frequency. But due to the existence of non-zero component, I mean, at the commensurate frequencies, we just cannot do this transform. So if we want to solve the system can using such transform, we need to leave out the resonance term. So in the new action angle variables, okay, their evolution equation becomes this form. You see, and on the right hand side, only appears the resonant term, because all the non-resonant term are transformed away, and the resonant term we cannot incorporate them in the transform, so they behave like some driving force now. Okay, now around the resonance means when the R omega R plus and theta omega theta is approximate zero, we will find the system, the degree of the freedom of this system has reduced from 2 to 1, simply because you see we have, for example, we look at the actions gr and g theta, and their driving force are proportional to each other. They're proportional to nr and n theta. So in the new action angle variables, gr and g theta are not independent. They are only 1 degree for them. Similarly, for the q, the angle variables, and we can define the resonant angle. We will find, okay, the resonant angle is almost constant. I mean, the q dot is roughly zero. That means, okay, around the resonance and the system, initially it was 2 degree of freedom, but around resonance, it become 1 degree of freedom. And we can use this 1 degree of freedom to describe the system. Okay, now let's look at, again, we will look at the three kind of orbits, I mean, but in terms of the new variables, the resonant angle and the corresponding momentum. Okay. So still remember the three kind of orbits in the slowly decreasing part, or suddenly decreased part, and the plateau part. So we have three different kind of orbits. And I mean, in the phase space, RPR phase space, the three kind of orbits look like this way. We just cannot get much information from that. But in the new variable, so the first kind of orbit is relatively far away from the resonance. We see the theta is, I mean, the angle is increasing all the time, but here, the sudden jump here is due to we limited the theta to be from 0 to 2 pi. So if you just add the 2 pi back, you see the angle, I mean, the resonant angle is increasing all the time slowly. And the theta is also changing with time in a very simple way. And if we plot a Poincare map for this 1 degree of freedom system, it looks like this way, very simple curve. See? So in this Poincare map, and the system just doing the oscillation, this way. Okay. And for the second kind of orbit, the chaotic orbit, you see, okay. So initially, the resonant angle is increasing, but somewhere it's decreasing. That's the term back we found in the R and the PR subspace. I mean, in this new variables, I mean the behavior is okay. Is a Q dot changes the sign, and if we look at the chaotic orbits in the Q and the theta space, you will find, okay, initially it oscillates like the previous one, but someday it decided to go turn to a different branch. Okay. And so for some such memory, the term back corresponding to some jump in the theta, and the theta, according to the definition, is just proportional to the actions gr and the g theta to some constant. So if some memory experience such orbit, you will see some jump in the actions, and the jump in the actions means a sudden phase difference in the memory waveform. Okay, the third kind of orbits is even simpler in these new variables, Q and the theta. You see, they just orbit along the closed curve. Okay. So in the new variables, we see the three kind of orbits, I mean, their behavior are relatively simple. Because due to the reduced degree of freedom, we now only have 1 degree of freedom, we can construct some effective Hamiltonian for describing the Q, the resonant angle, and the corresponding theta, the conjugate momentum. I mean, just ignore how do we construct it, but we can construct such effective Hamiltonian. So as a function of the theta and the Q, so the evolution of the Q and the theta will be determined by this 1 degree freedom Hamiltonian. And with this 1 degree of freedom Hamiltonian, we can figure out, okay, depending on your effect, the amplitude of your effective Hamiltonian, there are three kinds of orbits. See, if your energy is low, you will get the relatively simple object trajectory. But if you increase your energy a little bit to some critical value, then you will get the chaotic orbit, chaotic trajectory. If you continually increase your energy, you will get the trajectory on the plateau. Okay. So until now, we haven't discussed the radiation reaction. We just consider a test particle in the space-time. Then let's imagine if we turn on the radiation reaction, initially we are on this trajectory. And if we turn on the radiation reaction, what will happen? I mean, initially we are here, but we finally will need to cross the resonance. We will get here, but how? Yeah, you may think, okay, due to the parameter change, I mean, the conserved quantities are dissipated by the radiation reaction. The initial orbit may slowly change to this orbit, then this orbit, and finally cross the resonance and become this orbit. Actually, that's partially true. Because if the radiation dissipation is very slow, and your system will be governed by this effective Hamiltonian, due to your dissipation is slow, you will have some adiabatic conserved quantities. And the adiabatic conserved quantity, physically is an area enclosed by your orbit. That means if you initially are on the critical orbit, there is no way for you to go down to the second orbit because the area, they are different. But due to the adiabatic conserved quantity, and the area must be conserved. So in that case, the only way for you from the upper orbit to get to the lower orbit is we need the transition, the chaotic transition orbit. See, you get down to this orbit initially, for example, moving this direction, due to the turn back, you arrive the orbit, the chaotic orbit in this direction. Then you continually moving. So in the adiabatic limit, there is the only way for you to cross the resonance. But in the opposite limit, the non-adiabatic limit, you can imagine, okay, we can start from this orbit, then because in the non-adiabatic limit, there's no such conserved quantity. You can freely go from the top of orbit, then go down to the lower orbit, then cross the resonance. Okay, so there are two limits. Okay, I skipped some steps in estimating how does the jump, introduce the phase shift in the Emery waveform. But the conclusion is, okay, there are two limits in the large perturbation, and in the adiabatic limit, you will find, okay, we just don't cross the resonance. We just jump from one critical orbit to another one. We just avoid the resonance, and we can get the phase shift roughly proportional to the square root of your perturbation divided by your mass ratio. The small q is a smaller black hole mass divided by massive black hole mass, and in a small perturbation, we usually get the non-adiabatic limit. Then you can cross the resonance without any constraint from one orbit slowly to another orbit, and finally cross it. We can in that case, we can get the phase shift of this scaling. And you see, usually in the larger perturbation and the adiabatic limit, we will get much larger phase shift. Another thing is the jump, we will introduce a commensurate jumps in the axions, So delta GR, delta G theta, in our case, is a 2/3 resonance. It's -3/2, meaning. So as long as the phase shift is large enough, and we can figure out from the waveform the delta GR over delta G theta. So I don't think there is any other way to produce such commensurate jumps in the actions. So if you find some commensurate jumps in the actions, I would say that's a strong evidence for the chaotic orbits due to some perturbation in the space-time. Okay, yeah, that's all I want to say. Yes, yeah, slightly over time.
Any questions? I have a question. Sorry.
Well, yes, I'm just trying to understand, you know, this thing you were talking about. I mean, like this point you're making about adiabaticity.
Yeah.
So are you saying that if the perturbation is slow enough, it will be trapped in resonance?
Slow enough.
The radiation reaction.
Yeah, so in this case, right. Yeah, right. So the radiation reaction, I guess, would be the thing trying to drive you out of resonance. But that's slow enough, you're saying, you can get trapped into resonance?
You would never enter the resonance.
You never. So I don't understand that, though. I mean, okay, well, all right. So now if I make an analogy to, like, planetary dynamics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you know, similar, like, chaotic orbits in the solar system, right? You know,
yeah.
And so one example of something which is, like, slowly pushing the orbits is, like, say, like, Neptune moving out.
Mm-hmm.
And so there I know, you know, the answer is that, you know, so as Neptune migrates outwards slowly,
yeah,
traps lots of small bodies into resonant orbits.
Yeah.
And so then, like, why doesn't something analogous happen here?
Well, here is, we have radiation reaction.
Sure, right.
Yeah.
Okay, but similarly, I could have, you know, Neptune, like, moving inwards. And
so the Planet systems, right? So people study. So there is this convergent evolution, right? So if the orbits between these two planets are getting closer to each other, then you can, this resonance trapping is possible, okay? But if the evolution is that they are falling apart, this divergent evolution, then you can show that using an qualitative argument, this never happens, right? So this is for parameters. If you cross us, let's say if you have two orbits like this, then this orbit is the same. Okay, if you have something coming out and comes in and cross resonance, the trapping can happen. And if something like goes this way, the trapping cannot happen. Okay.
I don't understand that though. I mean, because for the Plutinos, that is like literally how they got into their orbits, right? You know, I mean, right, so Neptune slowly moved outwards.
Yeah,
and then it swept up lots and lots of small bodies into these, you know, resonant orbits.
Well, there is a famous book by what's that name? But it's Solar System Dynamics. So it has very detailed discussion why this cannot happen. Okay. So you can use a phase diagram, whatever. So you can draw that it does not happen if it happens adiabatically. Right? It's not adiabatically. I don't know. It turns out this Emery case. It's always like it goes outward. It's diverging. It's not convergent. So if it's like convergent, then this thing can happen. But if it's like diverging, it's trapping. Because for the Emery system, the ratio between the Newtonian limit when there's orbit far away, the orbit frequencies are all close to one. So it's like they are very close. But as this particle falls near the black hole, the frequencies are more and more different from each other. So it's like kind of divergent.
Okay, well, why don't we talk more about that?
Yeah, sure. I can bring you the book.
Okay.
Let's discussion why evolution direct matters for the present.
I'm saying like Pluto exists, right?
yeah, but okay, this is the idea about it. So maybe there is some other thing, but it's not idea about it.
Okay.
So in a real Embry, we won't have these chaotic orbits, right? Because
you mean your car?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's passing the resonance very quick. Just jumps, and then again we have stable dynamic, and then again it jumps, but between these jumps we have don't have chaos.
Well, in car you don't have such jumps, because the jumps is, I mean, that if you mean the jumps from this orbit to this orbit, I mean, if you mean these jumps in car, there's no such jumps, because that's such chaotic trajectories in car. We don't have chaotic trajectories.
Not in car, I mean, when you have the resonance, right?
What?
For your near resonance orbit. My point is that in real Embry, you cannot have a near resonance orbit, right?
We
because it doesn't stay in near resonance.
Yeah, it will cross a resonance. Yeah.
And so here also this adiabatic limit is not the adiabatic approximation that we talked about in Embry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, two different adiabatic. Yeah.
Consider that one. That means that if the adiabaticity over there is higher, then it passes through the resonance slower. So we might have.
Yeah, there are two different adiabatic limits. Yes, yes.
Another question. So all of these also depends on centricity for sure, and also Carter constant, right? In the spin of the black hole.
Yeah, I mean, here is one example I used, yes, but I mean, I checked another resonance. I mean, it get it almost exactly same behavior. You get some chaotic trajectories, there will be some jumps there and turn back. Yeah.
All right, thanks, Tim, and continue over lunch.